Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Another historical matchup looming this weekend for your Pittsburgh Steelers. We will get hot and heavy into that. I want to touch on Pitt football later on as well. The Pitt Panthers trying to start 6-0. They are 5-0 for the first time in over 30 years, almost 35 years at this point. The Penguins bounce back. A nice win last night after getting shellacked on opening night by the New York Rangers. We will make predictions. We will make picks, all of that as well. It's Donnie Football with you here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan, coming to you live from the beautiful Studio B at Bowser Chevy in Monroeville. Our buddy Joe Starkey, he's going to be a little bit late this morning. Had a doctor's appointment to attend to. Not sure where this doctor is located, but your pal Joe Starkey, not here right now, hopefully before the show comes to an end around 2 p.m. Off the top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding, as mentioned, we're going to get into a couple of different topics today. We'll have Ray Fittipaldo join at 11. Nick Costos will join us at noon as we'll get into some wagering chatter this weekend around the National Football League, and certainly as the game in Vegas gets closer and closer, really the betting capital of the world. A game that I'm certainly looking forward to a little bit more because I will be in attendance going out to Las Vegas for the first time in my life with some of my pals, and we are heading out there tomorrow morning. We will be at the game Sunday afternoon. So if you have any recommendations, please let me know and give us a call at 412-928-9370. When it comes down to the nitty-gritty stuff, the news and notes, sort of the headlines of this game, Steelers and Raiders, you think back, and we brought up the historical context around Steelers and Cowboys last Friday, and Joe compared it to the Celtics and Lakers, and how important it was that these two brands were facing off. Not quite the same cachet here, but make no mistake about it. You may have to open up an NFL history book, but the Steelers and Raiders, from a historical viewpoint, one of the best rivalries in the sport when it was in its heyday. I mean, you talk to somebody who was around in the 70s, and they will tell you firsthand what this series was like back then. I mean, the Ravens were not around then, and the rivalries within division were certainly not viewed with the same intensity as what we have today. But our guy Austin Bechtold back behind the glass in Green Tree running the ones and twos for us. Austin, I don't know how old your parents are. I don't know how old your father is. My father, he grew up, his real, you know, years of becoming a fan of football were right in this heyday, you know, the Steelers steel curtain in the 70s. And he got to see firsthand basically all of these matchups, these huge, meaningful playoff matchups, whether it was a divisional round like the Immaculate Reception game in December of 1972, a couple of AFC championship matchups, three of them to be exact. He got to form his football fandom around this rivalry, the Raiders and the Steelers. It has a lot of meaning, my friend, for the generation or two ahead of us.
Oh, yeah, my dad's the same way. The Immaculate Reception is probably his favorite game ever. He loves watching and listening to all the America's Game documentaries, all the, you know, all the big highlight scene setters, the Oakland Raiders against the Steelers. And you think of the Stick'em, You think of all the games against the Raiders where Tatum is going at it with whoever it would have been on the Steelers' offense. Historical, it still lives on in the memory of so many fans. It's sad to see the Raiders just continue to go. They go to L.A., and then they go back to Oakland, and then they go to Vegas, and it seems like that happens with everybody in Oakland now. But yeah, this, it's still a great rivalry, but it doesn't have the same flair that it used to, and I wish it would.
In the span of four calendar years, these teams met five times in the playoffs. They met twice the first two matchups in the divisional round, the Steelers winning in 1972, that being the Immaculate Reception game. So they won 13-7. The Raiders got the last laugh in 1973, about a year later. It was 364 days later, in fact. They beat the Steelers 33-14. And then they met three times in the next couple of years in the AFC Championship game. The Steelers winning in Oakland 24-13 in December 1974. And then twice in the same calendar year, limits, they met in the AFC Championship game. January of 1976, the Steelers won that game at home 16-10. And then December of 1976, the Raiders getting the last laugh, a 24-7 win against the Steelers. These teams dominated the AFC. They were also teams that collected Super Bowl championships several times in the 70s. We don't quite have that today, but just to give a reference that, hey, there is a whole lot of history here between the Steelers and the Raiders. What does that mean for this game on Sunday? Not a whole lot in the grand scheme, because certainly nobody is still around from any of those teams in any sort of player or management standpoint. Now, the families that own the teams are still the same. It is the Rooney family. It is the Davis family that owns the Raiders. But it is not the same man at the top on both of those sides. Now, when it comes down to some of the key headlines here for Sunday, some of the things to look for between the Steelers and the Raiders, the big question remains for Pittsburgh now, yet again, who will start at quarterback? Russell Wilson looks to be back to full health. He has practiced in full in the last two days. And we assume that he will practice yet again in full today as the Steelers have their final tune-up before they send it out to Las Vegas. Now, Justin Fields, 3-2 so far in his five starts with the Steelers, five touchdown passes. He has three touchdowns on the ground. He does have an interception. He has a fumble lost. He has five total fumbles, but he has not lost too many, fortunately. Fields is in a position here where he probably has some more pressure on him going into this game, assuming he does get the start. And the local reporters on that, Mark Cabali, Ray Fittipaldo, one of them, and Ray will join us in the 11 o'clock hour, they seem to believe that it is all looking like Justin Fields will be the guy starting for the Steelers on Sunday. Now, the national voices, we had Mike Florio on these airwaves a couple of days ago, and really anybody that was involved with the NBC Sunday Night Football crew, they seem to feel as if Russell Wilson is going to get the ball in this game. So that begs the question, what is the leash like for Justin Fields? Does he even get the start at all? Does Justin Fields get pulled at halftime after a slow start? Or is this really the final tryout, per se, for Justin Fields in this game Sunday in Vegas? My take on it, I would give Justin Fields this game. I would give him the opportunity to start in this game and bounce back from last week. It was not a good game last week for Justin Fields. It wasn't a good first half in that game in Indianapolis. I thought a great second half. I thought a near perfect game for Justin Fields after he lost that fumble against the Colts. So he has been a reason why the team has gotten off to slow starts, but he is not the sole reason for issues. I don't even think it's really close. I think there are several other issues as to why these Steelers are starting off slow. I mean, the defense was sleepwalking in Indianapolis. They were down two touchdowns really before they could even blink. And then the offense tried to bring them back in the second half, three consecutive touchdown scoring drives in that second half at Lucas Oil Stadium. And then last week, it was slow all around in the defense, even though they got turnovers against the Dallas offense and Dak Prescott, even though that happened, they weren't really forced. Besides the fumble that was caused by Nick Herbig and TJ Watt, that was the end of the first quarter. Dak made some really, really bad decisions when he threw a couple of interceptions in that game. So the defense has not been on point either. This defense that through the first 3 weeks was putting up some historic numbers, and the comparisons were out there to what we saw about 15 years ago with that 08 defense that won a lot of games and eventually won a Super Bowl. Those have been pulled back in a little bit. But the highest paid defense in the league is certainly also a unit to blame here. So I'd give Justin Fields one more go. If we see another slow start in Vegas, if the teams go into the locker room and it is 10-3 Raiders or 10-0 Raiders or even 6-0, 7-0, the offense really is not doing anything. They're not moving the football well. They are wasting opportunities. Maybe a turnover or two gets thrown in there. I could very well see Mike Tomlin pulling the plug on Justin Fields for now and going to Russell Wilson at halftime, who will be set to make his Steelers debut. And then Russell Wilson has the opportunity to step in and be the hero if he does come into that game and maybe a comeback takes place. Now, that's a scenario of Russell Wilson entering. The other one, if Justin Fields plays about an average game and the Steelers lose. I think if they drop three consecutive games, then the door is more than just ajar. I think that door is kicked wide open on Russell Wilson being the man to start the game against the Jets in primetime the following Sunday. Now, here's where you run into something that could get a little bit muddy. What if Justin Fields puts together an average, maybe a bit above average performance, and the Steelers win the game? Let's say that Fields doesn't light things up, per se. Let's say he throws for, I don't know, around 180 yards. Let's say he has a passing touchdown. Maybe he adds a rushing touchdown, but doesn't run for a whole lot himself, but he does score in the red zone with his legs. And let's say he doesn't turn the football over, but he does make a couple of shaky throws. He maybe fumbles the football via a bad snap or a bad exchange, and he doesn't lose it. So two total touchdowns, you know, under 200 total yards, and close to but not actually turning the football over, and the Steelers win the game. That's where you run into Mike Tomlin having the hardest decision of these three to make, because I think is very well the most possible outcome from this game on Sunday. The offense looks fine. It looks okay. It's not lighting up the scoreboard at Allegiant Stadium, but they win the game, and they win the way that Mike Tomlin likes the team to win games. Put it this way, this would not even be a conversation if that fourth down stop is made by the Steelers defense on Sunday night. Not even a conversation. The Steelers would have been 4-1, and Justin Fields would have been viewed as, hey, this guy drove us down the field, and, you know, whether it was a shovel pass or whatever, it's still a passing touchdown. He led the offense down the field, and the Steelers scored to take the lead. Pat Freiermuth got into the end zone. The Steelers had the lead in the final moments. They had the lead in the final seconds. If Dallas doesn't score there, I don't even think this is a conversation. I don't even know what Russell Wilson's practice status is, but I think the Steelers are, without question, going into Las Vegas with Justin Fields as the starter, and I think he has a lot more leeway, a lot more leash to play with if that game simply goes a different direction on that final play for Dallas's offense. The other quarterback in this game will be Aiden O'Connell. He'll be making his first start of the season, the 26-year-old mid-round pick from Purdue. This guy not going to set the world on fire either. But why, oh why, does this guy worry me? Because he's like so many other really half-ass quarterbacks that the Steelers have played in the past that they have somehow not been able to beat.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why am I worried about Aiden O'Connell? I shouldn't be. Not a single Steeler fan out there should be worried about Aiden O'Connell. But what do we know about the Steelers' defense going into Sunday? They are licking their wounds a little bit, and they are dinged up at a very important position. Now, they still have T.J. Watt. They still have Cam Hayward. They still have all the guys in the defensive backfield as well. The inside linebackers are healthy. That other edge rusher is a major area of concern. Alex Highsmith has practiced limited this week, but I don't think he will play. He's already been ruled out by Mike Tomlin. Nick Herbig is out. DeMarvin Leal is out. The Steelers are playing guys that none of us have ever heard of on Sunday opposite of T.J. Watt. And we may even see big Isaiah Loudermilk get out on the edge for the Steelers in that game. That's what they could be working with at edge rusher opposite T.J. Watt. Why is that an issue? Well, now they can even more so pay attention to Watt and make sure he is taken care of with multiple bodies on Sunday, because the other guy, unless we get a breakout type player, unless there's another James Harrison waiting in the wings, which would be a great story, that other guy ain't too much of a threat and can probably be handled with one body on every single rep. So here's why that's concerning to me. O'Connell is pretty immobile. He is not a dude that is going to run around and make plays with his legs. So you have to be able to get to the guy, get home, and put this guy on his back. I have a fear that that won't happen. I have a true fear that they will not be able to get a sack in this game. And I have a fear it will look like a younger version of Joe Flacco a couple of weeks ago. I had that fear going into the Colts game that Joe Flacco, if he entered, I didn't like the Steelers' chances. Not at all. And that's what happened. Richardson got hurt, on the third drive of the game? Now, he had looked very good, too, but I thought Richardson a lot more prone to turning the football over. I don't know. We really don't have the book on Aiden O'Connell at this point in his career. He is a young quarterback. Well, young by NFL standards. He is already 26 years old, but that's also because some of these kids play in college for like 9 years now. But O'Connell, the numbers are really nothing to be afraid of. There's nothing about this guy to be afraid of. But if he's allowed to stand back there and guys get open and guys make plays, you have Brock Bowers, who's already off to a hot start, the rookie tight end from Georgia. He has 313 yards receiving this year and a touchdown. Jacoby Myers seems to still be an option. O'Connell, why do I just have this fear that Aiden O'Connell can actually make plays against these guys? But I will say thank you to Antonio Pierce for not playing Gardner Minshew, because I have a pretty good certainty that that guy would make plays on the Steelers defense. Minshew, I saw him do it firsthand last season. The game in Indianapolis, and shredded the highest paid defense in football. He threw for 215, three touchdowns. They did not turn him over once. I don't even think he got sacked. He was able to make plays left and right. He picked them apart bit by bit. So I feel better that Minshew is not playing, but I still don't feel great about this game. And maybe you share that same viewpoint, and you can hit us up to tell us at 412-928-9370 if you have concerns about Aiden O'Connell starting this game for the Raiders, and why in the back of your mind you're thinking they're going to let some guy who's really a nobody by league standards take them to the edge. I have that fear that that will happen on Sunday in Las Vegas. The other big story with the Steelers is their wide receiver, George Pickens. What do we expect from that guy on Sunday? And what do we make of the antics and some of the ways that he answered questions earlier this week with Steelers media? I've said earlier this week, I said last night, George Pickens certainly deserves blame because he is the player involved here. I don't throw all of it on him. The blame is there to go around. I think the coach, I think the organization absolutely takes blame for this as well, because this is a Mike Tomlin issue. He is letting George Pickens dictate terms here, and it goes back to the issue that the Steelers already knew they had coming into the season. This is something that is not new in the world of football. This is something that can actually be seen at pretty much every level of football. I know that I never played in the NFL. Maybe I could ask Doran about this at some point. You'll see it at the high school level. You'll see it at the college level, whether it's D1 or D3. Things like this happen when that player, in this case George Pickens, when they know there ain't nobody behind them that can carry their load. There's nobody behind them that can step in and be as good of a player as them. There's no threat of a player behind them. We hear from some in the Steelers media, George Pickens a lot smarter than he lets on. So he knows this. Mike Tomlin knows this. And Mike Tomlin knows that George Pickens knows this. He knows that because the Steelers neglected to get a true second wide receiver threat on this team, that Pickens can basically push the Steelers and push Mike Tomlin and beg him to say, do something about it. You don't like how I'm going about things? You don't like the eye black I wear? Do something about it. Now, it's going to take more than a half benching, because here's the issue here. And I don't know if anybody out there is a fan of the show Breaking Bad, but one of the messages in that show from what I think is the favorite character, Mike Ehrmantraut, he always said, don't take half measures. You got to go all in on something. Another example of that here. Because you can't just half bench someone like George Pickens. You either go all the way in on it and you sit him down for a full game, and maybe you hope that changes his mind, changes his viewpoint on things. I'm not saying it will. I don't think it will. I don't think that's the right way to do it. Or you have this dude out there for a normal snap count, none of this load management nonsense, and that's what it is, nonsense. That was one of the most farcical things that Mike Tomlin ever said the other day. You get this guy out here for his regular allotted snap count, get him involved in the offense. You have to get this dude engaged early. And I know you're thinking, well, you can't force things. You're going to cause turnovers that way. You can design things that can make it so he gets his hands on the football early and easily. I think that's how they have to go about this, because you can't afford to lose this guy, and George Pickens knows that. That's the thing here. George Pickens knows that Van Jefferson ain't taking his job. Calvin Austin ain't taking his job. Roman Wilson can't even get a helmet. Brandon Johnson, he ain't taking his job. None of those receivers they have. Scotty Miller, he ain't taking his job. He knows that he has leverage here. He has power here. Their best chance to solve this is to kind of do what happened last season. We had the episodes with Pickens late last year, and we had the same discussion. How are they going to solve this? They got to try to corral this in. You have to get the dude involved early, get him involved often, but specifically early, get his engagement from the jump, and maybe he will have a big game. Remember Christmas Eve last year? The guy went off, and that came on the heels of a George Pickens outburst. How about that next game against Seattle? Another big George Pickens game. And then even in that finale against the Ravens in a monsoon, they couldn't really get him the ball just due to weather conditions, but he seemed to be into it. That's what they have to do. You have to get this dude involved. Normally, I wouldn't say give in this case, but I think they have to because they don't have another option behind him.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real, we're transparent, we're having a hell of a good time with it, and we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.